This is Dr. Larry Wilson, and this program is called The Real Self. And it is an expansion of a little book by the same title, The Real Self. And this book is a compilation of principles taken from A Course in Miracles and some tapes by a man named John Mark Hammer. And it presents the basic mystical viewpoint about life, basic mystical principles of living. It used to be called the Universal Curriculum because in A Course in Miracles it says that there is a curriculum that we will all learn eventually. The only thing we can determine is when we want to take the course, when we want to learn it. And it is these principles that are contained in this little book, which is a summary, but the book does not have much background in it, and so that'll be the purpose of this tape, along with going for even more basic principles that help you understand the teaching. It's nothing, I don't take any credit for any of this information. It's ages old. You can find the same information, a lot of it in places like the Bible, the Bhagavad Gita, ancient books. It is a spiritual psychology that differs from other psychology in that it is based in this mystical reality. And the reason that I'm making the tape or this CD is that it has been very useful for my healing and that of many, many people. Okay, let's begin with some background. I've been searching for answers for about 25 years as of the time of making this tape in 2005. And the search started due to ill health mainly and a lot of confusion. And like many people, I went through many systems and teachings and teachers trying to figure out what was what and what life is about and why we're here and what we're supposed to be doing here. And there have been a lot of steps along the way. I was influenced a lot by a man named Roy Masters, who teaches meditation and is a Judeo-Christian fellow. And he teaches a kind of spiritual psychology as well. And then through other connections, I came across a set of tapes, supposedly channeled from Jesus, which later turned out to be very similar to a book called A Course in Miracles. A Course in Miracles is a channeled book that came out in the early 70s, I believe. Again, supposedly channeled from Jesus, and it's not an easy book to read. It's divided into a text, lessons, and a teacher's manual, and I always had trouble reading it and ended up putting together the principles in the little book, The Real Self. So that's basically how I got to this. But I found that by working with these principles over a period of about 7 years, it took listening to tapes day and night, slowly my mind started to shift its belief systems about the world and about myself and what's going on here. And as I did that, there was a dramatic improvement in both my mental and physical health because I no longer entertained negative thinking. At least I reduced the amount tremendously. And I became aware of all the ways that I was doing this subtly, the words we use to talk about ourselves and other people and the concepts and the thoughts and so forth. And it has made a tremendous difference for myself and others. I know of at least one of my clients who was ready to commit suicide, and by working with this material, turned her entire outlook around. It is possible to do that, and so that's why this merits attention. Okay, let's go through some of the very basic concepts. As we said earlier, this is a basic mystical principles, like Mysticism 101. It's not No fluff, no dogma, no rituals, just the basic principles that are taught in many religions and teachings. The first principle might be that there's only two mental emotional states fundamentally, and you're either in love or in fear at all times. And this alone, of course, is a great simplification, and some people would say oversimplification. However, the teaching insists that those are the only two states, either in fear or in love. And love can be joy and happiness and a lot of other positive things, and fear includes anger and guilt and remorse and anxiety and other negative, so-called negative emotions or that boil down to fear. And that's explained more in the book. Now, along with that is a very unusual statement, which is that fear is unreal, and that the only one of those two states that's actually real is love. Now, one of the difficult parts is that love is defined in this teaching very differently than it is defined in the world. Love in this teaching is not a feeling. It is not a feeling. It has nothing to do with family, friends, romance, sex, beautiful sunsets. It doesn't have to do with that, although those things may help evoke it. Love is an energy. It's not a feeling, it's an energy. And it is basically the energy of the Creator. It is more like the Force in Star Wars or the Tao in Taoism, that sort of thing. It is an energy. And that energy, which is that of the Creator, brings forth all things. So that's the teaching, is that love is not this feeling that wells up inside us. Love is an energy that, sort of like a battery, it's the energy that moves everything, that makes everything happen. It's a creative energy. And when we feel that feeling flowing through us, then we say we are feeling loving and loved and lovable. When we don't have that feeling inside of us, we tend to feel the opposite, which is fear. And most of the world lives in fear. Matter of fact, one of the principles is that the whole world is based on fear, and that what we call the world is a substitute reality. It's a substitute for this feeling of just being loved and in love, but not in love with a person or a place or a thing, but just in love with a capital L, perhaps. There's a wonderful little book that describes some of this called The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis was a Christian type of writer, and this book is not a particularly Christian book, but it's about people who take a trip to heaven on a bus, and it's a funny book, humorous. And he talks there about the differences between heaven and hell, and he says heaven and hell are right here, and we get to choose. But he says that in heaven, people are in love with a capital L. They don't have to be in love with anything in particular. It's a state of mind. And that's what this teaching is about, is that there are two states of mind, and that we have a choice. Most of us don't feel we have a choice. We feel that when something happens, like a bad hurricane or a horrible illness, that we need to go into fear, that that's the right thing to do, that that's the normal thing to do. Just like we feel that if someone does something bad to us, that we have a right and it's the correct thing to do to go into anger, you know, or fear. Or if we do something wrong, that it's correct to leave our loving state and go into a state of guilt. Which guilt means culpability, you know, blame. This teaching is that actually we are the presence of love on the planet in the physical form, and that that is true regardless of what happens, regardless of what we do, regardless of what others do. And so it's never actually correct to leave that state. But we're so used to doing it, because the whole world is based on fear, that we don't even feel we have a choice. But in fact, we do. And one of the phrases from A Course in Miracles that's very important is, I can choose again. I can choose again. And I can choose for peace, or I can choose for love. Because it's very easy to get thrown off, and then you're back in the world of fear and anger and guilt and unhappiness and blame and all the rest. None of which, they say, is our natural state. And in many ways, this is therefore the opposite of teachings like that of Freud, which look at us as animals, basically glorified animals. This teaching, which again is the basic mystical teaching, you'll find it in many systems and religions, is that our basic state is that of perfection, because we are spiritual beings, not physical beings primarily. And in the spirit world, everything is fine. Everything is perfect. And we're working out different issues and lessons and other things here as physical beings, but our true reality is what we want to keep in mind, or the real self. And the real self is always perfect and always remains in this loving state, because it is simply an extension of the Creator and that Creator's energy, which is love, defined as love. And that's the reality, and that's all there is. It's a very simple teaching. As a matter of fact, it's much too simple for most people. It does not require complex study, and the more complexity you get into, the harder it is to understand it. It is expressed in the New Testament Bible as God is love. God is love. And it's rather simple. However, working out the details of this in your daily life is not always easy, and that's where the principles in the book and the explanations are very important, and maybe we can go into some of those in more detail. Okay, so that's the basic teaching, and we have a choice. We can live in love, or we can live in fear. It's also called the unhappy dream and the happy dream, because the basic mystical teaching is that this world is not real. The Buddhists call it Maya. Others call it illusion. It is, in fact, a created world, that the world of our senses, and that there's something beyond it, and that if we can identify with the something beyond it, we will understand this world much better. That this world is kind of like a stage. That's how Shakespeare expressed it. The whole world is a stage. It's a feedback system where people act out their thoughts. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people with thoughts of violence, thoughts of poverty, thoughts of sickness, thoughts of depression, whatever it is. And so they act those out everywhere around you. Those are being acted out. And it creates the conflict and the horrors that we see around us. But that those are not necessary. That's not the nature of this planet. It's just that those are the thought patterns of people. And that we're all in this together, because one of the other principles is that we are one in consciousness. There is one mind. In A Course in Miracles, it's called the one mind of Christ. And therefore, we are connected. And so when you see an event that seems to be outside of you, whether it's a war halfway around the world, or a hurricane, or children being enslaved, or something else, or some illness, that we have something to do with that, both in the causative way and in a curative way, because our thoughts are creative, and if we're not careful, we think violent thoughts, for example, and we may never act them out. We would say, oh, I'm too good, I would never hurt anybody. But if we have the thoughts, we put them out, and because all minds are joined, somebody somewhere acts it out. And it could be halfway around the world. They pick up a gun and they shoot somebody, or they do some other kind of violence, or whatever. Just like thoughts of illness and thoughts of poverty or thoughts of other problems, these get acted out. That's the nature of the world. So that's a very different concept of what's going on out there. However, I've trained myself so that when I turn on the news, for example, rather than think that what's going on is real, I think, okay, this is what the human thought forms are expressing at this time. You see, this is the feedback right now, and that it's partly my doing, because we are all creative beings, and what we put out comes back to us. What we put out comes back. In other words, the world is our feedback system, our personal feedback system. And for example, if you are ill, then this teaching is that you have put out thoughts that you believe in illness and actually want to experience it for some reason, perhaps. And this teaching is that the reason you want to experience it is not necessarily because you're a masochist or you're, you want to hurt yourself, but perhaps you want to take on a problem in the world and heal it. And as you heal it in yourself, you make it easier for others. And so many times if you're ill, or if you have a problem with poverty or a problem with anger, it's because you've chosen to take on that issue, to take on that issue. And you've chosen out of your power and out of your compassion. And therefore not to get down on yourself and not to judge others who have a particular issue or problem. That you've taken it on in order to heal it. Because as you heal it, you will make it easier for the thousands or millions of others in the world to heal the same issue. This, of course, is a very different attitude about illness and poverty and horror than the world teaches. The world is into blaming people or fixing people or feeling guilty or whatever it is. No, we just say, if you find an issue in your life, it is because out of your compassion and your strength, you've decided to take it on. Because in spirit, you're perfect. And in spirit, everybody's perfect. So whether it's the villain or the saint, you know, the sinner, they're all fine. And they're sort of like actors in a play. And anyone knows this, that when they're lining up people to do a play, somebody volunteers to be the good guy, and someone volunteers to be the bad guy, and someone volunteers to be the policeman, and so forth. But at the end of the play, they forget all that, and they all go home, right? They all go home together. So that is the nature of this reality, and that's a very hard one to accept. That everybody is innocent, that there are no victims in the world, because they're more like actors and actresses. And so you can play the role. Some will play a role as a victim, some will play a role as an oppressor. But in reality, that's not what's going on. That's just a role. And that we are somewhat like Hollywood actors and actresses who get confused between their stage life and their real life. Maybe you've heard that about actors and actresses, that they can become very confused, and some of them walk around like they're on stage all the time. And when they're not, and they get all messed up because, for example, they're not careful, they marry the wrong people, or they get involved in things that are not healthy, and so forth, because they think they're on stage. Well, the reality is, in this teaching, that the world that you see is a stage where people take a script and play out a role, and other people agree to it. It's always done cooperatively. There is no oppressor, and there is no victim. Everybody agrees. If you don't like your script, you can change it. You can make a decision. I've had enough. I've had enough of being upset, or I've had enough of being whatever, poor or sick. And that may sound idealistic, but it's true. I believe it's true. For example, I had a lot of illness, a lot of illness, and I realized that my thinking had something to do with it, because I believe that whatever is in your life, you bring it about. And it's great if you've brought about a wonderful life, but for many people, they have not. So I realized my thoughts created this, and so I had to put out a different set of thoughts. And the creativity does not occur quickly. The manifestation does not occur quickly. It may. That's what all the books say, the power of positive thinking and all that, that you just start thinking differently and your life changes overnight. But usually it takes years, because most of us, we're sloppy with our thinking, and we may think, okay, I'm not thinking bad thoughts anymore. I'm not going to be upset anymore. I'm not going to be guilty anymore about everything. But actually, those thoughts, the old thoughts, creep in. And so you're not really thinking the new thoughts all the time. And so it takes a while. But over time, you can do it. You can change the thoughts that you put out, and then your reality will change. That is the teaching. That's the mystical teaching. Okay. So there are only two states, love and fear. Love is really the only state because we are the extension of the Creator's love. The physical body, that's the Creator's love. Everything is the Creator's love. Even a war is the Creator's love. It's just one way that things are expressed. It may not look happy, but it is. Everything is a manifestation of the Creator's love. The other state is fear, and the fear is unreal, and in fact, all fear is the state, the mental emotional state, where you don't feel connected to the Creator. You feel separated from God, if you want to use those words. You don't have to have the word God in there, but you feel separate from your Creator. And the feeling that goes with that is guilt. I'm sorry, fear. The judgment of that state is called guilt. In other words, guilt is a judgment in which you feel condemned, you know, guilty. And again, that is associated with feeling cut off. Instead of realizing you're just here to play, and everybody's just here to play, and there's no guilt. There's no guilt. Now, you might say, well, what if you do something, quote, wrong? Well, but is there such a thing as wrong? In this teaching, it is not about right and wrong, which, again, is a difficult one. And sometimes two souls may come together and agree to something that may sound horrible. It may be one of them shoots the other, one of them hurts the other in some way, cheats the other, whatever. However, it's still done by cooperation. And why it's done could be for many, many reasons that are way beyond our comprehension, because only a part of us lives at this physical level. So, for example, one person could cheat another person because they're repaying something that happened in a distant past, and it might be another lifetime, who knows. Another reason would be to help a person learn some lesson. It might be to help a third party learn some lesson. So there can be all kinds of reasons why a person gets sick, why a person is poor, why a person is angry or does things that are terrible, whatever. And the trick is to stay out of judgment. The trick is to stay out of judgment. And this is a theme that goes through this, and it is not an easy one. That to stay out of judgment of yourself, a lot out of yourself, but out of others too, is very difficult because that is not the way the ego mind thinks. The regular mind is always judging things because that's how it survives. For example, it judges that it's very cold outside, and you better put a coat on. Or it judges that better not walk in front of a car because you might get hit. So the process of forming opinions and judging things is very, very strong. And in the physical world, it's absolutely necessary. Absolutely necessary. You have to judge whether your food is fresh and going to nourish you or whether it's rotten and it's going to kill you. You have to judge whether getting involved with a certain person is a good idea or whether it's a bad idea. We're asked to do that all day long. Psychologically, however, judgment gets us in trouble because we don't know the whole picture. And that even applies to physical situations as well. And so one of the principles here is that we want to shift the way we evaluate things, and the teaching talks about discernment rather than judgment. Discernment looks like judgment. In other words, you're presented with two alternatives and you choose an alternative. However, the process that you use to make the decision is very different. When you use judgment, you go into your mind and your memory and your set of fixed ideas, and usually your upbringing and your fears and all that, and you decide based on that. When you discern a situation, there's none of that. There's no judgment, there's no emotion. You just feel into the situation and investigate the situation, and you make a choice. Judgment has a final quality, like this is good and this one's bad. Discernment is much less final. It's much more like this is a preferable situation, but all is acceptable. We don't have to judge anything as good or bad. All is acceptable, but one is preferable for this moment, and that could change in another moment. So this whole concept of judgment is a huge area. And in order to get out of judgment, we have to get out of all this fear and other things, guilt, anger, all that. Instead of judging and blaming, which is often associated with judgment, this teaching is about responsibility. And this is a very difficult one. It used to be easier. Our culture, American culture particularly, used to be based on the responsibility of the individual, which people took responsibility for their lives, every aspect of their lives, their health, their financial well-being, their associates and friends and everything. That has changed a lot, where now people want to be taken care of by the government. And they've enacted all kinds of welfare laws. And when they're not happy, they want the legal system to give them retribution instead of taking responsibility. Many people want others to take the blame, so to speak. But this teaching is unique in saying full responsibility for everything in your life, not just the good stuff. And responsibility does not mean guilt. In other words, if your life looks, quote, bad, that's okay. In other words, don't judge it as bad. If it looks, you know, messy, fine. You don't have to judge it. It just is what it is. And if you want to change it, you can, because it's just a script that you're reading, that you're acting out. So blame and judgment are of the ego. Responsibility, taking responsibility, full responsibility, and acting from that is of the real self. Because the spirit self is responsible. It is sovereign. It is never a victim. This is another theme of this teaching, sovereignty rather than victimhood. Another theme of our culture is that people are victims. This is huge. It permeates every area, and it's getting worse by the day. In other words, it didn't used to be this way. We used to expect people to take responsibility. They took responsibility for their well-being, the well-being of their family and friends. We didn't depend on others. We didn't place blame outside of ourselves. We didn't place responsibility and power outside of ourselves. But today, people are encouraged to actually feel like a victim, and there are many programs around to get compensated as victims. Whether it's because you're black and people were enslaved 200 years ago that people should pay you now, or whether you're a minority, or whether all sorts of things, you were cheated. People are expected, or they're taught in school to be victims. And the thing is, this is very disempowering. And I look at it as almost a conspiracy to take people's power away. It is. Because when you take responsibility, you are empowered. And forgiveness is empowering. Victimhood, in any shape or form, is totally disempowering. Someone else controls your life. That's the premise of a victim. And in this teaching, there are no victims. This is a power teaching. This teaching is about your power, your personal power. And you cannot be powerful and be a victim. So the teaching is that there are no victims at all. In other words, in spirit, all beings cooperate. They all cooperate to have certain experiences. That's the purpose. And so two people might decide in spirit, okay, you do this, and I'll do that, and it'll end up, you know, you cheating me or me hurting you or whatever it is, and it's to have an experience. But that's all it is. and it's done cooperatively. Now, this is easy to see, perhaps, or easier to see with adults. You might think, well, okay, because people, adults, are thinking beings and they get themselves into all kinds of pickles and situations. But what about children? You know, what about an animal or a child, especially a baby? You can't say that a baby, you know, caused him or herself to have a birth defect or to get run over by a car at age 2 or to get cancer or something. Well, in this teaching, everyone is sovereign all the time. That is not an easy teaching. And children are still very advanced spiritual beings, many of them. And the fact is they just have a small body. However, they are fully aware beings, and they are fully sovereign beings. And so even they cannot be victims. I will explain this slightly differently, just to see if we can get it across better. The idea is that all events are neutral, and all events are scripted. All events are scripted. In other words, nothing happens by accident, and nothing happens without the consent of everyone involved, whether it's 2 people getting into a fight or an accident or something, or 2 million people involved in an earthquake or in a war, refugee situation, whatever. It is all scripted in some grand fashion, in some amazing fashion, and it is all done for our benefit. All things are working for good is one of the principles of this teaching. All things are working for good. Another principle is you are loved at all times. You are totally, completely, and unconditionally loved at all times. Were the love of the Creator to ever be withdrawn for an instant, we would all vaporize. In other words, there'd be nothing there. We are totally dependent upon the Creator's love. We are created beings, but we in turn become co-creators, and that love is there all the time. And there are no victims because everything that you see is scripted. In some way, it is scripted. That means it is done with the consent of everyone involved to learn lessons. Now, you might think, well, how can the Holocaust or something, or an atomic bomb going off, how can that be a lesson? What's to be gained there? Well, there are lessons that were learned. Actually, the atomic bombs and the Holocaust has probably helped prevent more of the same. It has probably woken people up from a kind of slumber that they were in, that they could just do what they wanted and so forth, and it has made for a better world. And so there are lessons. Sometimes a group of people, whether in the case of the Holocaust, the Jewish people or the German people, the group of people needed a particular type of lesson and chose this type of lesson. And so these wars can serve a purpose. And they're gruesome and bloody if you are focused only on the physical. If you're focused only on the physical world or the mental world, yes, they are horrible. If you can expand your perspective, and that's what's being asked here, then you begin to understand that, okay, we're not really physical beings, and the physical bodies come and go. The physical bodies come and go. It does not mean not to attach importance to life. It doesn't mean that we don't help people. It doesn't mean that people deserve to suffer or anything like that. However, we are not fundamentally physical beings, and we don't want to be caught up in the physical world. This is a teaching that goes across all lines of religion and spirituality. There's a saying in the Bible, the love of the world is the enmity of God, meaning not that the world is the enemy of God, but when people love the world, meaning they get too involved. One of my teachers, Dr. Bernard Jensen, said, wear the world like a loose coat. Wear the world like a loose coat, which means try not to get too involved with anything in this world, because it is all a script, a play. It is not the real you. The real you is a spiritual being.
You can't see it with your physical eyes. It's much greater. It's much more wonderful. It's perfect. And there's another world out there. There's another world out there. That's always the premise of the spiritual teaching. And so whenever we get into victimhood, blame, judgment, anger, we know we're back in the physical. Because all that stuff is only of the physical plane. Okay. Another principle is that in order to heal things, we bring our love to the situation. In order to correct all situations, we bring our love to that situation. And we don't mean feelings. We mean this energy. And this, again, is the opposite of the world. The world thinks that if you want to fix things, you better, you know, get tough and do what you have to do and all that. This is a different teaching. And it says that if we can bring through who we really are, we will bring healing, whether it's to the body or bring healing to financial situations, personal situations, so forth. Just bring your love to it. And what we find is that most people bring their love to certain things, but not to others. And that the purpose of things like good friendships, good relationships, is not that they bring you love, because they can't. You are love. No one can bring it to you. However, when you're with certain people or certain places or certain situations, you are reminded of who you are. That's all that gets happened here. That's all that happens in a loving relationship, is you are reminded, oh yeah, I can be loving and I am love. And then you start living that way and you become much happier. And the tendency is to give the credit to someone else or to some place, some special place or some special situation, you know, like we have to go to the movies, we have to go here, and that makes me happy. No. Your happiness is within you, and it's just that some people refuse to express it except when the circumstances are so good, you know. So that's very important to realize, that no one can bring love to you. Nothing in the world can bring love to you. Searching for love and searching for special places and special people and special careers and all that, that's futile. What you want to do, and it's expressed in the Bible as the kingdom of heaven is within, is find it inside. And this has been the teaching, again, of all the religions. People go off, like Jesus went off to the desert. Yogis go off to caves. Buddha went off and sat under a tree, so that they could find the happiness and joy within. And then they can express it. Otherwise, you're on a constant roller coaster. You're happy 1 minute, sad the next, angry the next, because you're not in tune with yourself and who you really are. So love heals all things. You just bring your love to that situation. And there are definitely situations that are hard to bring your love to, if you have an animosity toward someone. The ego is full of little loves and hates. And so it's a question of overcoming them. And this is where the Bible phrase, love your enemies, turn the other cheek, all that kind of stuff, it's hard in practice, because the world doesn't teach that. But that is the spiritual teaching. Another interesting point, and there are many, and the point of all this is that there's a system to all this. We can't say it all at once, because speech is linear. You know, this talking about it is linear. That means we can only do one thing at a time and then go from A to B to C. But in reality, it's what you might call a holistic system. It's a worldview that is not linear. It fits together, and the pieces fit together. And when you read this book, The Real Self, you can skip around, because there's no principle that's, you know, that much more important than the other. They're all part of the picture. And when you listen to this tape, you may want to listen to it several times, not to learn it, because that would be linear, you know, to memorize it, but to realize that it's all part of a system. And the pieces fit together. You will see, if you study it and apply it, that it begins to fall into place. The individual parts may actually look kind of strange or sound strange, but there's a system to it, and it works as a system of living. It's actually a practical system of living. We're not interested in, you know, highfalutin theories. That's not the idea. This is talking about a very practical way of living, which has been called enlightenment. It is sometimes called, in Christian terms, being reborn again. And it is the spiritual life. It has to do with a different way of living, a different way of looking at things and people, and a different way of conducting yourself. And one of the teachings is that the only reason, ultimately, that you took a body is out of compassion, because on this planet, people need bodies in order to walk around down here, and other people only listen to bodies. Most people don't listen to what you might call the still small voice within. They only listen to other people and what people write in books and so forth. And so you have taken a body in order to help those people, in order to wake them up. That is your true purpose, to wake up other people. This is explained in the teacher's manual of A Course in Miracles, that your real purpose is first to wake yourself up as to what's going on here. In other words, learn the universal curriculum. And then, once that's done, start waking up other people, because their happiness and your happiness are tied in. As it says on these tapes, nobody goes home until we all go home together. In other words, our happiness is tied together, and you can't just take care of yourself and let the other people alone. Once you wake up, you will feel like helping others to wake up, because it's so wonderful. It's so absolutely wonderful. So our purpose in being here is to be like Jesus and Buddha, to be spiritual teachers, to first wake ourselves up. And the principle here is that the Holy Spirit, or our higher self, brings us whatever events we need to wake up. That's another difficult one, because it's one thing if that means a book drops in your lap or something like that, or you meet a great teacher. But what if the event to help wake you up is a horrible illness or a crippling accident or terrible poverty or some horrible trauma? That doesn't make sense, does it? Yes, it doesn't make sense in the world's terms, but in these terms, the idea is that the Holy Spirit, or the higher self, the real self, knows exactly what you need to wake up. It knows how to break down your ego structure, your judgments, your systems, and it brings those situations to you. You have a choice on how to react to it. You can get very angry or very depressed or very guilty about it, or you can use it as a stepping stone. And anyone who knows about how people respond to illness or to misfortune, so-called misfortune, know that people have a choice. We probably all know of people who are handicapped or who have had terrible situations, and they've made the most of it. You know, what's that expression? If the universe hands you a lemon, make lemonade. I like that. Or other people become traumatized, and some of them remain traumatized for the rest of their lives. A lot of them do. They remain traumatized for the rest of their lives. And it is taught that many times that you don't have a choice about that. But in this teaching, you do. You have a choice. You can choose to remain traumatized and depressed or angry, or you can choose, you can see the truth, you can at least entertain the truth that the Holy Spirit brought you whatever you needed, no matter how horrendous, and that it has made you a better person if you allow it to do so, and it is helping to break your ego structure, that these events, and it's not only personal events, it could be world events, it could be a world war or a hurricane, are helping people to break their ego structure, and that all is working for good, and all is fine, and there's no reason to get upset. And again, that doesn't mean that you do nothing, that you just sit back and, you know, just twiddle to your thumbs. No, you can take an action that you feel is appropriate. However, it's not an action out of the idea that things are terrible. It's just an action of compassion. Like, oh my God, people are starving, I'll send them a little money, or I'll go volunteer here or do something. But it's not because they're victims, it's because they're friends. That's how they express it in this. There's no people who are victims. You're not helping victims. You're not feeling sorry for people. You're just helping a friend. So we've talked about the idea that love, only love, heals all things, and the implications of that. I'm working around the concepts here because it's not a linear system. It's a holistic system. And all we can do is, I think about it as like climbing a mountain. How do you describe a mountain? Well, you kind of can walk around the mountain and you can look at it from different angles. And that's what I'm doing here in presenting this viewpoint, this perception. And the way I taught this to myself was these tapes, which are sold by the Shanti Cristo Foundation. There are three series of 12 tapes, Way of the Heart, Way of Transformation, and Way of Knowing. And I listen to these tapes over and over and over because each tape, sort of like the points on this tape, presents a different perspective, a different point. And that's all you can do, is see the different points, and then slowly your mind will put it all together. So what we're doing here is like climbing a mountain and examining the mountain from different points, from different perspectives, and then we can see, little by little, we get to see the picture, the whole picture. Okay, another very interesting point is that a big part of this teaching has to do with projection. The teaching is that at all times, we either extend love or project fear. That's the teaching. At all times, each of us is either extending love or projecting fear. Now, the reason it's stated that way is because our nature is love. We are an extension of the Creator's love in the world of form. And what makes us happy, the Creator only wants us to be happy, and what really makes us happy is to extend or do what we are, is to extend what we are. And that is love. And again, loving people, this is tricky, does not mean hugging them and kissing them necessarily. It doesn't even mean hanging around them. It means to put forth this energy. And I think of it sometimes as I visualize a light bulb in my chest and this light coming out. And that's how I visualize extending love. Because it doesn't have to be something you do physically. You could just smile at people, or you could just sit at home all alone or lie in bed, and you can do it from there. Now, there's another process, though, that can look like extending love, but it isn't, and that's to project fear. If we are not in a loving space where we are extending what we are in fear, which is this absence of love. We're in this place where we don't feel loved, and it's not a pleasant place. It is not a happy place. It's like being in the dark, where darkness is not a thing, but darkness is an absence of light. And fear is not a happy place. And what we do is, in order to get out of the horrible feeling of fear, is we project it. We say, it's not my fault. It's due to this, it's that person's fault. It's the fault of the government or the world or the weather, whatever it is. So we project our fear. The definition of projection is when you don't want to own something. Think of projectile vomiting. You vomit it out, you throw it out, and you put it on somebody else or something else. That's projection. And it's a very important concept in this teaching. You either extend love or you project. And what you see in the world is mostly projection. There is love, of course, out there, and there are people extending love. Actually, all around, that's happening. However, a lot of it is also people projecting their fear and their anger and their guilt and all the rest. For example, if one has violent thoughts, they're scary to have violent thoughts. You feel like stabbing somebody, whatever. And then you say, well, I don't think that way. I'm a nice person. But the thoughts are still there, and what we do is we project them. That means we put them outside of ourselves. And someone, somewhere in the world, picks that up and picks up a knife and stabs somebody. And it's tempting to think that that's not me. I would never do that. That's a bad person out there. What the teaching is that it's never out there. It's just someone else who picked up your thoughts. And it could be thoughts of greed, for example. And you might say, well, I'm not a greedy person. But we do have these thoughts because we haven't trained our mind. And our minds are the products of our culture, unfortunately. The mind is the product of a culture. Until you take control of your mind, it is the product of the culture. So you might project your greedy thoughts and just say, I don't have those thoughts. I'm a nice person. And then someone else might pick up those thoughts and, you know, hoard all this money and not pay the bill and all this stuff. And you might point your finger and say, oh, that's terrible, and not realize that we project what we don't want to own. It can be thoughts of goodness. That's an interesting one, that you can project. For example, Christian faith teaches some people that they are sinners. And people actually project their goodness onto, like, Jesus. Or they might project their goodness onto their favorite sports team or their government or something. And all of a sudden, those people can do no wrong, or onto a rock star. And those people have all the goodness, and they're put up on some pedestal. And people do this. So people project all their fears, whether their fears of all the bad things or their fear that they're a bad person, and they put someone else up on a pedestal. So there's this constant psychological process going on called projection. There are two processes, really, that are very important. One is called perception, which is how we interpret the world. And then there's this process called projection, where anything we don't like, we push out of ourselves in a psychological way, and it shows up out in the world. And then there's a third process called extension, extending love, which is the goal, which is the what we're here to do. So these words are used in psychology, but they may have slightly different meanings, or they're not taken to the same limits as they are in this teaching, which takes them to the ultimate level. So, for example, anger is always fear that is projected out. And one of the exercises that I learned is anytime I get angry, anytime I get upset or angry, I ask myself, what is it I'm afraid of? Because remember, there's only two emotions, love and fear. And anger is not part of love, therefore it's part of fear. But it's a fear that we don't like to look at, because to be afraid of everything is very demoralizing, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's like, what's wrong with me? Why am I so afraid? And so the mind goes elsewhere with it. And one of the first responses, and it's actually a physical body response, is anger. That's actually an adrenal gland response. And so to short circuit that, the way it's done is to say, okay, as soon as I feel anger, what is it I'm so afraid of? And if you can keep it there, you will get to it. You will see what you're afraid of, you know? If someone calls me a bad name, what am I afraid of? It makes me angry. Well, I'm afraid it might be true, or I'm afraid that other people will pick it up and do the same thing, or I'm afraid that My name will be tarnished. My reputation will be tarnished. And people won't like me. And so forth. It's just a very interesting exercise. Anytime you're angry or upset, what am I afraid of? What am I afraid of? And you'll have to do it thousands of times because, again, our minds were trained. We are products of our environment. And until we meditate or do something, this is a form of meditation, by the way, too. Just look at all this stuff is a form of meditation. But until we do something, the mind just kind of goes in a zombie-like fashion, in an automatic pilot kind of way. And unfortunately, we're taught by the teachers and the counselors that it's good to be angry, it's okay to be upset, it's okay to be all these things. And so we don't look at them. We don't really examine it unless it gets to be really crippling. But this teaching says, no, the natural state is to be loving and to be in love with a capital L. And if you're not there, then there's something wrong. You're back in the world and you want to look at it. Not justify it, not wallow in it, not try to explain it. You want to move out of that state. And the way you do it is by understanding, first by understanding that fear is unreal. It is the absence of love. And that we have elected to cut ourselves off from the Creator and feel that feeling, but we never really separated from God. That's one of the teachings. You are always one with God. Jesus expressed it as, I am one with God. I and the Father are one, is in the Bible. And when you really feel that, then you can extend love because you know you're connected, you know you're loved unconditionally. It doesn't matter what you look like, what you did the day before, what mood you're in, how much sleep you got, whether your health is great or whether you got a sickness, you are loved. And you're loving and you're lovable. And there's nothing to do but extend love and to celebrate. The last little chapter in The Real Self is about celebration. Because if you understand all this stuff and you move into this state of what you call enlightenment. Some of the other religions call it other things, nirvana, or I don't know all the words. There's not much to do but celebrate. There's not much to do but celebrate because everything's okay. And celebrating does not mean getting drunk and dancing all the time. It can be the way you do your work. And it can be any kind of work. It could be the way you take out the garbage for a living, if that's what you do for a living. That's fine. But it's done with a spirit of celebration. You're just celebrating. And you're celebrating the opportunity to extend love. You're celebrating the opportunity to relax, be happy, and extend the Creator's love into this world. That's all you're doing. And so that's why it ends with celebration. And the idea is, even if the ego mind thinks that you go to the supermarket, for example, because you need food, or you go to the doctor because you need a medication or something, then in reality you don't need anything, and you're just here to celebrate. And so when you go to the supermarket, you can just be the presence of love in that supermarket, and that's the real reason you're there. And when you go to the doctor, you can be the presence of love in the doctor's office, and that's why you're there. And if you're stuck in a traffic jam, you can be the presence of love in the traffic jam. You don't have to get upset and say, oh, I'm going to be late. That's the ego mind. That's the earth plane perspective. And it's not an easy training. It's not an easy way to live. However, it is a very stress-free way to live once you understand it. If there's one principle that is a very powerful one in all this, it is the thoughts are powerful, that every thought is powerful and every thought is creative. And again, this is not a new principle. It is taught in many, many groups and religions and unity and science of mind and what is the Christian science and so many things, that your thoughts are powerful. And if there's one thing that holds us back, it would be the idea that certain thoughts are not powerful, or that certain thoughts don't matter. For example, it doesn't matter if I hold a little bit of anger, or it doesn't matter if I'm a little bit, upset all the time, or something like that. The teaching is that every thought is creative and powerful, and that we need to learn to control the mind and control your thoughts and choose at all times what thoughts you will think. And as I say, the way I did it was listen to these tapes over and over and over for about 7 years from Shanti Cristo Foundation. It's shantikristo.com, by the way. And they're on CDs, too. Because it kept bringing up more and more of my thoughts that were not in alignment with this teaching. And then I could change them. Because every thought is creative, every thought is powerful. And if I'm not aware of some of my thoughts, or if I'm sloppy and I let them slide, I say, well, I like most people, but I really can't stand that person, that kind of thing, then my creating is influenced by that. In other words, it creates things I don't want in my life. So this principle that all thoughts are creative and all my thoughts are powerful is a very important one, and we're always creating from our thoughts. It's just that we're often not aware of the thoughts that we think, and so sometimes the creation doesn't turn out the way we would like. Now to conclude, I'll just make the following summary statements. I love you. That means that I send you the energy of the Creator, the energy that you are, only to remind you of who you are, not because you need love, because you are love, but just to remind you. And that all things are working for our good. All things are working for good. Put out of your mind any thought that is different from that. All things are working for good. And if all things are working for good, there's not much to do except celebrate. There's really not much to do except celebrate. And finally, that you can choose to be happy.